Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. I am Peter Schiff, the host of the show for the next hour live, taking your calls, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And I do the show live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. You can hear the show on shortwave, 5.07 megahertz, or on my website, www.europac.net. We also archive it on the website for podcasts. I know a number of people have complained that it is now taking several days for my radio shows to be up, and I apologize for that. That is compliance. That is the the FINRA rules and compliance. It's, you know, all these shows have to be looked at before they get put up there, and it's just all the extra compliance red tape. And so that is the delay. Believe me, they would be up a lot quicker if the government wasn't delaying the process. So I hear your complaints. I'm trying my best, but you know, we don't live in a free country anymore. And we have to appease the bureaucrats in Washington, and I think it's only going to get worse from here, everybody. I mean, look at President Obama and what's going on, and I'll get to that in a minute. Just wanted to make a few more announcements. So first of all, I know I've been speaking a lot about Euro-Pacific precious metals. Everybody asked me. I think they will finally be open next week. I'm not positive of that. I think the website is going live next week, so you guys should check it out, europacmetals.com, E-U-R-O-P-A-C, metals.com, and we will be selling physical precious metals for delivery, as opposed to Perth Mint certificates, where it's still physical, but we hold custody in Australia. This is to have the bullion delivered to your house. And remember, we're not going to be dealing in any numismatics, no proof sets. Just real gold and silver in bullion, either in bars or coins. That is what you want. If you want to buy gold, if you're afraid about inflation, if you want to protect your purchasing power, that's what you want. You just want precious metals. You want to get as many ounces as you can for your dollar, and you want to buy it from a firm that you can trust so that you know that what you're getting is the real deal. Anyway, so the website is europacmetals.com. Also, Euro-Pacific Canada, for all of you Canadian, my listeners out there, Euro-Pacific Canada should be open in July. You can check out the website. It's under construction. It's europac.ca, E-U-R-O-P-A-C.ca. They're not open yet. I hear they should be going live in July, which is next month, so that's great. Also, for you guys up in Canada, I will be on BNN, Business News Network, in Canada tomorrow. I think, let me check the time. I'm looking on my website. I'll be on at 12 noon on BNN. Also, I will be on CNBC tomorrow at, I think, about 4:30. So make sure and tune in, because it's going to be very, very interesting, because I'm going to be up there going against Ron Insana. Now, if you don't know what's going on with Ron Insana, watch my most recent video blog on Schiff Report, where I took on Ron Insana for Ron Insana's criticism of Ron Paul. And, you know, I went over to my podcast, but I'll talk over it again briefly. I'm really looking forward to my encounter with Ron Insana to argue for Ron Paul. But there was an article that was written in, I think it was the Washington Post, about conflicts of interest in Washington, and the main focus of it was Ron Paul, because and the argument was, well, he's on the banking committee arguing for a return to the gold standard, and he has all these stocks, gold stocks and silver stocks, as if that that's some kind of conflict of interest. I mean, first of all, he's got no prayer of convincing Congress to go back on the gold standard. But the irony of it is, everything that Ron Paul is doing to try to restore fiscal sanity to Washington actually undermines his gold investments. The best thing for gold is that Congress doesn't listen to Ron Paul, that they keep pursuing the policies that he's trying to prevent. Now, the reason Ron Paul owns all these gold stocks is not because he thinks he's going to succeed, but because he thinks he's going to fail. That's why he owns them, despite the fact that what he's trying to do undermines his investment philosophy. He understands that Congress is just not going to do the right thing, and so that's why he owns gold and silver. But it was more interesting that Ron Insana went out of his way to discuss the investment strategy. And what he said, this proves that Ron Paul is a simpleton, that Ron Paul has no idea what he's doing when it comes to investing, that Ron Paul doesn't even understand basic economics. Now, Ron Paul is probably the only guy in Congress who understands basic economics. And of course he knows what he's doing. That's why he owns so many gold stocks. Meanwhile, the S&P is down. It's lost value during those 10 years. How can Ron Insana say that Ron Paul doesn't know what he's doing because he owns gold stocks? Obviously he knows what he's doing, because look how well gold stocks have done. And then he even pointed out, he said that, you know, there are much better hedges against inflation than gold or gold stocks. I wonder what he's talking about, because I don't know of any inflation hedges that have performed as well as gold or gold stocks over the past 10 years. Certainly not TIPS. I'm sure that's what Ms. Insana is referring to, but it'll be interesting. So I will be on CNBC, you know, picking up the challenge. And, you know, when Ron Insana insults Ron Paul's knowledge of economics, he's also insulting me, because, of course, I was an economic advisor to his 2008 presidential campaign. So if he knows nothing about economics and I'm advising him, then he must think I know nothing. And, of course, my investment strategy is very similar to Ron Paul's, in that I've got about half of my portfolio in gold and silver stocks. And I've been that way for, you know, for a long time, maybe 10 years. So, you know, I've got the same investment strategy. So I'm going to see Ron Insana tell me I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know anything about basic economics. And I know there was an individual who's listening who, you know, who went on to Ron Insana's Facebook page, because apparently, you know, he got a lot of information from Ron Paul fans, not necessarily because of my video blog, but just people in Ron Paul on the Daily Paul, you know, saw these comments and they started, you know, hitting him up on Facebook. And so Ron Insana emailed somebody who had sent my video to him and basically said, oh, Peter Schiff, he doesn't know anything. He's been wrong his entire life. He's never gotten anything right. You know, he's never made any money. I mean, maybe he's confusing me with himself. You know, he's the guy that hasn't gotten it right and hasn't made any money. I mean, I think Ron's a nice guy. I got nothing against him. But the way he went after Ron, and now the way he's going after me, considering his own track record, I mean, he's got a lot of stuff wrong over the years as far as not seeing this financial train wreck coming. He did, you know, after years and years, you know, he started on FNN. And he was on, you know, before they merged with CNBC. I met the guy a long, long time ago, one time when he was doing a story about my dad. So that's how I originally met him. But I've had very little contact with him over the years. I maybe met him one other time since. So to say that he really knows me and he knows what I've been doing is a stretch. But he finally launched his own hedge fund, Insana Capital. And he was doing it for 2 years, and he eventually closed up because he couldn't make any money. He couldn't raise enough money to generate enough income for himself to stay in business. So now he's back in broadcasting. But anyway, it's gracious of him. I'm glad that he's going to appear with me on CNBC. So, you know, spread the word. It should be a good show, especially for you Ron Paul fans that want to see somebody defending Ron. Anyway, also what I wanted to talk to you about today before I take your phone calls is the president's speech last night. You know, regarding the oil spill and what's going on and BP. And first of all, you know, I'm not defending the BP's actions here. I mean, certainly, and I state that BP needs to be held liable for damages that it caused, particularly if it's due to negligence. And not just BP, but there are other companies involved, Halliburton, Transocean. There are other companies that are involved. It's not just BP, although BP is the only one that anybody seems to want to talk about. But, you know, there may be negligence to go around here. But certainly the parties that are responsible need to be held accountable. But, of course, we can't overlook the government's role in all this. All, you know, I mentioned this before, all the environmental regulations that keep them out of the shallow water and push them into the deep water, the fact that we're not drilling in on land in places like in Anwar. And, of course, you know, the liability cap that Congress imposed, you know, created a moral hazard. It created probably more reckless behavior. And, of course, you know, now they want to retroactively repeal that, which is like an ex post facto law, which is totally unconstitutional. But what I don't like about the president's reaction is, first, I don't like the strong arm tactics. I don't like the president of the United States bringing a corporate CEO up to the White House and basically telling him what he needs to do. I mean, he's basically forced BP to set up an escrow account for $20 billion that's going to be run by his appointee. And I would rather see BP run the escrow, because I think they'd do a better job of distributing the money to people who really deserve it. Because, you know, whenever you have a pot of money, you get all kinds of false claims. I mean, look at all the phony claims that came in after Hurricane Katrina with FEMA. There's going to be all kinds of false claims. I want BP to weed that out, because, you know, they're not going to not pay, because if someone has a legitimate claim and they don't pay, they're going to get sued. But the minute you get this government appointee in there, this thing is going to turn into a political slush fund. You know, the people that really need the money probably won't get it. It's going to be people with political connections who are going to be feeding at this trough. I don't like that idea. And there's no legal authority for the government to strong arm a company into doing this. We have rules. We have a court system in place. You know, we have to be a nation of laws, not a nation of men. But unfortunately, that's what we're turning into. You know, also, Barack Obama stated today that BP has voluntarily decided to set up another trust fund for $100 million to pay the salaries of the unemployed oil workers that are unemployed, not because of BP's spill, but because of the six-month moratorium that Barack Obama imposed. That's not BP's fault. They didn't need that moratorium. And, of course, now what? BP voluntarily did that? Of course they didn't do that. BP knows they're not responsible for those costs, yet they're doing it anyway out of political pressure. Now, and, of course, what is going to happen? Are the people just going to get paid and not working? I mean, why don't the unemployed auto workers at least have to work on the cleanup? Why don't they work in order to get paid? Are they just going to get a paycheck for taking a vacation for the next 6 months? I mean, this whole thing is ridiculous. And what this is going to do is it's going to undermine even further the integrity of our markets, of our economy, of the rule of law. It's going to increase the political risk of doing business in the United States. People are going to think twice. Foreign companies, certainly, before they get involved in the United States, they're going to worry about how safe are their investments, because if the winds blow in a particular way, you know, what's going to happen? You know, this is political risk. You know, I deal in that all the time. Your Pacific Capital, and you're doing international investing and you're going into other countries that don't respect the law, where they might seize your property without due process. You know, assets there always trade at a discount to reflect the heightened political risk. That's what's going to happen to American assets. Our country is going to be discounted because you can't trust our legal system. And that is just, this is just more damage. It's the worst thing that we need. And of course, what I really fear too is Barack Obama is again not going to waste this crisis. You know, as bad as the oil spill is, and it's doing a lot of damage, and we lost lives. I mean, it's a real disaster. But unfortunately, economically, the greater disaster is not going to be from the spill, but from all the new government regulations we get because of that spill. And what I'm afraid of is this is going to be the catalyst to get cap and trade through, to get some new grandiose government energy policy through that's going to try to micromanage energy, that's going to try to subsidize the type of energy, the alternative energy that Barack Obama thinks we need. And this is going to be a mess. I mean, I am a big believer in alternative energy. I'm investing a lot of my own money and a lot of my client money in alternative energy and in oil and gas, because that's what's going to be the main energy source right now. But all these decisions as to which energy sources are developed need to be made independent of government interference. It needs to be the market that dictates this. It needs to be consumers. It needs to be what type of energy will be efficiently produced so that there's a market for it. We need market forces. We need profit and loss. We need private industries solving our energy problems. We can't have bureaucrats in Washington trying to centrally plan our energy needs based on political considerations, because it will be a huge disaster. And as I said, as bad as the spill is, the greater disaster is the government's reaction and what the government is going to be able to do, because they're going to use this oil spill and the environmental damage. And this is going to be what's going to get the politicians on board who were opposed before, because people are going to be afraid to oppose these reforms, because they're going to say, oh, you don't care about the environment, you don't care about all the economy, you know, you're siding with the big villainous oil companies. I can see all this coming. I mean, you can see it. If you didn't watch that speech that Barack Obama gave last night, you know, find it. It's probably on YouTube. It is a scary speech. Anyway, I'll talk a little bit about what's going on in the markets. I mean, first of all, in the last week, we have seen somewhat of a reversal in the dollar strength. The dollar index got as high as almost 89 last week, is now back down to 86. I think we need to get below 85 to really signify that we've reversed this short-term rise in the dollar. The stock market also potentially has reversed its short-term decline. And again, all these assets seem to be correlated. One of the strongest looking charts right now, I think, is gold. I think the price of gold, which hit record high, I think it looks beautiful chart. I mean, despite what Ron and Son is saying, I mean, I think the smart money is going to still bet on gold and silver. I think the gold and silver stocks have been trading well these last few days. I mean, even today, you know, when gold was down most of the day, the gold stocks were strong. I think the chart there for the gold stocks looks really good. Again, remember, this is all my opinion, folks. I mean, I could be completely wrong. You know, when I'm talking about what I think the markets are going to do, you know, there's no guarantee that I'm right, right? I mean, in fact, you know, there's a chance that I'm wrong. In fact, if you believe in the conventional wisdom, if you'd rather get your advice from the government regulators or from, you know, the Main Street Wall Street firms, I mean, they'd probably disagree with me. Also, oil. You know, oil prices, I just think oil is going to explode to the upside. I think in a delayed reaction to the spill in the Gulf and to the moratorium, more importantly, the six-month moratorium, and the fact that the cost of drilling is now rising dramatically because of higher insurance premiums, the greater risk in the industry. I mean, we're just going to get a lot less production out of the Gulf, and, you know, that's going to reduce the supply. Meanwhile, if the dollar does resume its descent, that's going to increase demand dramatically. Meanwhile, you still got growing demand out of the Asian economy. So, I mean, oil prices could just go ballistic. And I think once we take off some of this overhead resistance, I mean, we can easily go back above $100 a barrel. I think we can get closer to that relationship of oil to gold, which is more, it's generally closer to 10 to 1. So, you know, if gold's around $120 an ounce, I mean, $1,200 an ounce, you know, you'd expect oil to be around $120 a barrel. And I think that's basically where we're going. We might even get there before the end of the year. And, of course, by the time that happens, that's going to throw more cold water on this idea that the economy is recovering on the back of the consumer. I mean, that's impossible. You know, the consumer is flat broke. But, of course, once he's confronted with $4 a gallon gasoline, and then, you know, people are going to start to, you know, rethink the quote-unquote wisdom of this consumer-led recovery, which is impossible. We're not going to have a recovery in this economy unless it's producer-led. We're not going to spend our way out of this mess. We're going to have to save and produce our way out of this. And as long as the government is expanding, that is impossible. But, you know, it was one thing when consumers had to pay $4 a gallon for gasoline and they still had jobs or they still had home equity. It's a completely different ballgame when the home equity is gone and a lot of them are unemployed. So it's going to be a lot worse this next time around. Oh, we do have a caller. So I guess, and it's from Canada. So I wonder if anybody's able to hear me in the United States. The only guy on the line is Canadian. But let's talk to Steve in Canada. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about Ron and Son. When you mentioned this Facebook, I went to look on there, and his background, his education is in film and media. I don't understand how he can talk about economics at all if he doesn't even have an education in it.
Well, you don't have to study it. I mean, he's been a financial. He's worked, you know, for CNBC and FNN, you know, since the early or late 1980s. So he's certainly been involved in financial markets, you know, way beyond whatever he studied in school.
Yeah,
but I think that, you know, to call Ron a simpleton, to say he doesn't have any idea what he's doing, that he doesn't understand basic economics solely because he had half of his portfolio in gold and silver stocks, especially considering how good those stocks have performed during the time in which he's owned them. It's crazy, the things that he was saying.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I just don't understand, like yourself being a background in economics, how he could ever bring up anything like that to about you or Ron Paul that in economics that he would know more or have just more information.
Yeah, even a lot of people in Congress now know that Ron Paul's a guy that understands economics. A lot of people are asking Ron's advice now. Ron and Sonic can't. The only thing he must know about Ron Paul is that he owns gold stocks, and he's so anti-gold stocks that he thinks anybody that owns them must be a complete moron.
Yeah, which would be interesting to listen to conversation tomorrow at 4:30.
You know, I like that attitude, though. People always talk about the fact that there's a bubble in gold and a bubble in gold stocks. Not as long as guys like Ron and Sana have that kind of attitude. You know, maybe there's a bubble in gold stocks when Ron and Sana's got all his money in gold stocks. That might be an indication that it's time to get out. But as long as he's that skeptical, you know, I'm going to buy him with both hands. So.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Listen, thanks, Peter.
Anyway, I hope I have you as a client soon, Steve, because, you know, EuroPac Canada is going to be
into that.
Yeah, we'll stop by when the office opens up.
Okay, thanks. All righty. Oh. Thank you.
Okay. Also, too, as another housekeeping note, I think the new Euro-Pacific website might debut as early as next week. So it's coming soon. We've also changed our logo, a little bit. So you might notice that on the new site or when you get your new statements. And by the way, you know, if you don't remember, we are switching from Pershing to NFS, which is owned by Fidelity. We're doing that switch, I think, July 7th. So we will have that transition. I think for the month of July, you'll get two statements. You'll get a statement from Pershing, and you'll get a statement from NFS. And then going forward, starting in August, all the statements will be coming from NFS. And hopefully the clients will find a big improvement in the look of those statements and the accuracy of the pricing of both the securities and the dividends that they pay. But anyway, but bear with us during this transition. It will result in a little extra paperwork during this process, but I'm confident that over the long run, the gain will be worth the pain. Anyway, next up is Ed from Florida.
Hello.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I'm a client here in Florida. Been a client for a couple years. Been following you for, since 2000. I wish I'd have listened to you back then. I would have made a lot more money, but it's just amazing. You just can't believe how blind this world can be to fiat currency. But my question is this: I'll cut to the chase. Might makes right. The United States has the largest military. We have 140 bases all over the world. Maybe it doesn't matter what happens to this and that and the gold, and because we'll start a war and just we'll make things work.
Well, we can't afford to start a war. The Soviet Union had a huge military and they collapsed. I mean, we're broke. You know, Rome had a big military and Rome collapsed. I mean, if you're financially unstable, if you're depending on borrowed money to pay your soldiers, you can't remain a power for long. You know, yes, we do have nuclear weapons and we can try
That's
to hold the world.
Right there.
Yeah, but see, I don't think. See, the people in Washington aren't that evil. They're not going to hold the world hostage. They're not going to say, we're just going to fire nuclear weapons unless you buy our bonds. I mean, they're not going to do that. So, you know, this house of cards is going to implode. You know, I would rather take it down ourselves than have the creditors do it.
The problem is, Pete, is you're an honest man, and you think most people are deep down honest. And I wish I felt that way, but I think this...
Well, I think most people who are not in politics are honest. I think most politicians are dishonest. But there's a difference between being dishonest and being a murderer. You know, I don't think they're evil, but I do not think they're honest. I do not think Washington is full of honest people. I think the honest people are not in Washington. If they ever go there to begin with, they don't stay very long. You know, it is very difficult to get elected and get reelected if you're honest. That is the one of the inherent flaws with the democracy is that the best people can't win the elections. And if they ever win, it's a fluke, and they don't stay there very long. I mean, Ron Paul is like the exception, I guess, that proves the rule. But, you know.
Well, Pete, you know, you're a good man, man. I keep up the good fight. That's all I can say. Thank you, man.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And yet, you know, there probably are a few more. Ron's not the only good guy in Congress. I'm sure there's a few others, but, you know, they're few and far between, and they don't have a lot of influence. They don't make it to the top of any of the committees because they don't play ball. You know, they don't do what's right politically. They do what's right for the country, and you don't go very far in Washington doing what's right for the country. Anyway, another Canadian caller today, Ed, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, thank you. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
I wanted to see if I could get a question to Ron and Sana.
Well, you know, you'd have to ask Ron. I mean,
he blurted out that he said that gold was a complex investment instrument, and that seemed to me like a very stupid statement.
Yeah, I didn't even know. Because he said that in the context of that, you know, there are better ways to hedge against inflation, and that gold, and so. And I don't know, you know, and maybe he thought that Ron Paul was not smart enough to understand these better ways, like tips. But I think Ron Paul is smart enough to understand that the tips is like hiring the fox to guard your headhouse. Tips are a lousy hedge against inflation. You know, gold is a much better hedge. And the proof is in the pudding. Look at what's happened to the price of gold. Anyone who bought gold 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, they've got a lot more money than people who bought tips.
And it's not a complex instrument. It's a simple instrument, and nobody on CNBC holds people accountable when they make statements like that.
Yeah, I don't even know what he meant by it's complex. Yeah, I mean, it is pretty straightforward. Now, of course, there are some gold companies out there on the shady side, and unfortunately, these are the guys that can afford to run all the advertisements. You know, there's that one company. Every time I'm on the internet, if I Google my name or I go to YouTube, right? I mean, there's all these ads for the same gold companies all over the place, and because these ads are so expensive, they have to pay for them by ripping off their customers. But some of these gold companies make it a lot more complicated because they introduce all these phony numismatic coins, and you got to do this, you got to do that. It really is simple. You know, you just buy, you know, 1 ounce coins or 10 ounce bars or 100 ounce bars, and you just get a reputable a mint that you know that you got gold or silver, and you just buy it. I mean, it couldn't be any more simple.
There are a lot of complex investment instruments out there, and gold is not one of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, I was hoping you could hold them accountable for us.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how long. Usually when I do these segments, you know, we get 5-6 minutes, and, you know, so I can't get that much in. You know, I read that on his Facebook site, Ron Insana said that he's willing to, you know, have Ron Paul on for an entire 2 hours to debate investments in economics. I wish they would extend that same invitation to me. I'd love to debate anybody CNBC wants to put up against me for 2 hours.
Well, it sounded like he was trying to sound smart, and he came off sounding very stupid. So good luck with it.
Okay.
Okay, take
care.
Yeah,
speaking about CNBC debates, you know, my old Art Laffer was on the Kudlow show as I was driving my car. I just didn't do the show, was debating Brian Westbury on the Kudlow show. Now, Westbury is always bullish. I've never seen him not be bullish. And, of course, now Art Laffer is taking the bearish side and arguing for a recession. Of course, when I debated him on CNBC in 2006, the economy couldn't be better. There was no problems anywhere in sight. Monetary policy was spectacular, all this. But now, finally, he sees that there's a problem, but he lays it all on taxes. You see, in 2006, he said that there was no problem because there were no tax hikes coming. Now he sees a recession because tax hikes are coming. It's not all just about taxes. You know, there are other issues at play. Yes, tax hikes are bad for the economy, but there are a lot of other structural problems in this economy that Art Laffer still doesn't figure out. But anyway, I guess I just got sidetracked on that. But it's interesting that, of course, you know, Art Laffer is still always on Kudlow debating, and I'm, you know, you never see me on that show anymore. Anyway, let me go to Cliff in Alabama.
Hey,
go ahead, Cliff.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I guess I'd like to start out by, you know, touching on this whole Ron and Sana thing. I think that perhaps Mr. Insano ought to look to other members of Congress to accuse of being economically ignorant. I don't know if you happen to see a Ron Paul video web blog where he said that one of his fellow members on the Financial Services Committee came up to him after a meeting and said, "You mean we're not still on the gold standard?" I mean, and this isn't something he posted in, you know, 1982, which would have still been 10 years too late. But I mean, this is something that Congressman Paul's posted recently. So I mean, recently elected officials that serve on the banking committee that don't know that the United States is not on the gold standard. That's,
I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing how little, our congressmen know about our own monetary system or about our own economy. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, that's something that will certainly change if somehow I'm able to be elected to the United States Senate myself. And I certainly hope they don't pass any restrictions on owning gold stocks or silver stocks, because I have a boatload of them and I'm not selling them. So if they, I might have to resign if they try. In fact, that might be one way to get. That might be one way to get me out of the Senate, is to pass a law that requires me to sell all my gold stocks. Although I'll have to challenge it as unconstitutional before I resign. But
there's
no way,
no
way I'm doing that. Then they'll try to make me sell my oil stocks, they'll try to make me sell my China stocks. I got to protect myself.
They'll basically nationalize your portfolio, if you will.
Yeah, they'll force me to buy U.S. Treasuries.
And at that point, you might as well.
But fortunately, there might be enough congressmen in there that realize how much damage their own policies are doing, and so there could be a lot. There might be a lot more congressmen that got gold stocks that we know about. I mean, they might not be. They might realize, that how bad these policies are, and they might be protecting themselves even as they throw the rest of us, down the river.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like some of these guys are talking out of both sides of their mouth. I mean, take for instance Alan Grayson. He proposes liberal social welfare programs, yet he's one of your clients. So I assume that he's well invested in metals.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really discuss investments on the air. But I can tell you this: I think Alan is a very shrewd investor. He's made some own homework. And he's done really well over the time that I've known him, and he is a believer in gold, and that's one of the reasons that I think he worked with Ron Paul on the audit the Fed bill, and Alan Grayson is very good on certain issues, certainly those issues that are related to the Federal Reserve, and the banking bailouts. I mean, so he's very good on some things, but then he's very bad on others, because he is what we call a limousine liberal. In the classic sense, and he's, and so that's Alan. But he's a nice guy. He's a family man. He's got good kids. But a lot of his politics is completely crazed. But we got to be thankful for the fact that on a few issues at least he's been on the right side of the debate.
Certainly I don't dispute that at all. I mean, my point is that it seems like he's doing one thing that's not compatible with another.
I've had many arguments with Alan Grayson over the years, long before he decided to run for Congress. I mean, he's been a client of mine for maybe 15 years, so I've argued with him, for an hour at a time on politics, and so as I said, but on a lot of things, and he's a bright guy. I mean, he's probably one of the brightest guys in Congress, despite the fact that he believes in so many things like the socialized medicine or the cap and trade or a lot of votes that he's made, and now he's pushing for it. I attack this in my blog, mandatory vacations. There are a lot of real left-wing things that he believes in, but I think he believes in them sincerely, because we have these arguments about these things long before he had any political aspiration. So, it's a question of just being wrong,
If he's sincere in his beliefs, then maybe he can be persuaded to think as Dr. Paul does, and perhaps he perhaps Alan Grayson could become the next Larry McDonald or something like that.
Well, I think there is hope for him. I think there is hope for him because, bottom line, I think he's a good guy. You know, and I say that just because I've known him for as long as I have. I think he's a good guy. But I think he's mistaken on a lot of things. But since he is intelligent, and I know that, there is hope that at some point he could be persuaded to see the light.
I certainly hope so. If you got a minute, I guess that was kind of a little diversion. I hadn't really planned on calling, but couldn't help myself at the last minute. I'm very much a novice to the field of investing, I think I'm just getting to the point where I've got enough in my savings account that it could last me if some catastrophe occurred, and I certainly want to, get out of American dollars as much as possible. And I was just wondering if you had some general tips for the novice investor who doesn't have a ton of money to put up front, but I guess has a burgeoning career and the potential.
Yeah, well, I mean, the best thing. I mean, I don't know how much you're talking about, but talk to one of the Europac brokers. Also, call the new company, Euro Pacific Precious Metals. Talk to them. You want to protect your wealth. I mean, I believe that the dollar is going to be debased dramatically to pay for all this new government. And I think all the new government, the bigger government, is going to undermine the economy. So it's going to be less efficient. It's going to be less productive. At the same time, we're going to have more money. So I think the dollar collapses and prices go through the roof. And people who are foolish enough to maintain their wealth in dollars will watch it, just disappear, right out from under them. So I think you got to take action as quickly as you can into things like precious metals and foreign currencies and foreign stocks. We deal, we have a lot of small clients, you don't have to be, a heavy hitter to protect your wealth. I mean, if you have any wealth at all, we can help, we can find a way to try to help you protect it. And of course, you got to understand the risks, and, I could be totally wrong. I mean, that's, but there's risks in everything you do. I mean, if I'm right and you ignore my advice, you lose a lot of money. If I'm wrong and you accept my advice, you might lose a lot of money. So you gotta decide for yourself who you believe, and then you gotta invest accordingly.
And I guess always Ben Bernanke could go Austrian on us tomorrow, and that could change everything. But I somehow doubt that that'll happen.
Yeah, I'm not gonna hold my breath.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your call. Next up is gonna be Craig in California. Go ahead, Craig.
Hi, Peter.
Greg. Greg.
Yeah. My question's about the behavior of the stock market following the Lehman crash, or the Lehman failure in the crash.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, after that and the bailout, everything kind of crashed together. And then the gold stocks bottomed in about November 2008.
Right.
And they've basically been rallying ever since then. The S&P kind of kept drifting down until March. Do you have a theory about why that is?
Yeah, it wasn't just gold that bottomed. The Chinese stock market bottomed in October of 2008, and it didn't make a new low in March like the U.S. stock market did. And so I think that, the stronger markets, which were the emerging markets, the Chinese stocks, precious metals, commodities, they bottomed first. The weaker market, the U.S., bottomed last. And so I think that was a sign of, where you want to have your money over the long term. And, if you look at this time around, what's different about the decline that we've had this year so far is that gold has risen. So in 2008, when the market had the big drop, gold went down with the market. Now gold is going up despite the fact that the market's gone down. And in fact, the market retested its March lows of 8 ounces of gold. The Dow went back down to 8 ounces of gold, even though it's nowhere near as low as it was in nominal terms, because the Dow got down to 6,500. But in terms of gold, it's the same. Now, I have been saying on this show, and what I've been telling my clients privately, is that my guess is that we're not going to have a repeat of 2008. where the foreign stocks get clobbered more than the U.S. and the dollar gets really strong and gold collapses and oil collapses. I think that was 2008. I think the next debacle is going to be one where the dollar falls. And in that environment, gold will be rising, oil, commodities will be rising. And I think emerging markets or foreign stocks markets will be doing much better than the U.S. That's what I think is going to happen. And now, I didn't see the foreign markets being as weak as they were last time, and I didn't forecast that huge rise in the dollar. So I was wrong then. I mean, it's possible that I'm wrong again, but I don't think so. You know, I think that was a head fake because most of the people didn't understand the significance of what was going on, and that's the reason that they went to the dollar. But I think as more and more people figure this out, and I think the fact that we're starting to see these sovereign debt crises, that people are worried about governments that have borrowed too much money, it can't be long before they figure out that we're the worst offender of the group. And while everybody is talking about Greece right now, you know, Greece isn't it. We are. And it's some people, you know, it's America that's going to be the word, not Greece. And that's when the real crisis is going to hit.
Before they created the GDXJ, I didn't really have an indicator to tell me how the Gold Juniors were doing as a group. Do you have something that kind of measures how they were doing back in that same period to compare them against the majors?
Well, they all went down. I mean, and the smaller companies went down even more. I mean, there were some stocks that I owned myself that were down like 90%.
I was there too.
You know, and you know, in general, that worked out to my advantage. Because I didn't sell any stocks that were down 90%, but I did buy some more. I mean, there were some stocks that I had bought years ago, like 4 or 5 years ago, that I had huge gains in that, you know, all of a sudden the stocks got down to what I paid for them way back when. And, you know, rather than panicking and being upset that I didn't sell when they were higher, I just took advantage of the opportunity that was presented to me and bought more. And so, you know, I'm in a much better position personally. My personal portfolio is in much better position because of that huge decline. And that's the same is true for many other people who took advantage of it. Now, there are some people who actually, you know, got scared and sold when the market went down. And I feel bad that people got, you know, bluffed out of the market because maybe they were overexposed or they were on margin. My clients weren't on margin. So if I had clients that sold, it wasn't because they were forced to. It was because they just, you know, they couldn't handle it. They just, you know, got sick to their stomachs. But a lot of clients, you know, that I had been buying these stocks for a long time. There's not that many clients that just started buying in 2007 or 2008. You know, but they all went down. But, you know, if you look at where the gold stocks are, the gold stocks are much closer to their highs, right, from 2008 than the stock market is. You know, the Huey only got to, I think the high was around 500, 520, and it's at 470. So, I mean, maybe, you know, whereas the Dow was up around 14,000, and now it's around 10,000. So even though the gold stocks went down more, they recovered a lot better. And, of course, the gold stocks did a lot better in the years leading up to the collapse of 2008.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Next up is Ariana in New York.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me. I'm starting to invest in commodities, but I've purchased recently American Eagle coins at like 18% markup, and I'm just not sure if that's the right way to be investing in commodities or I should just save enough money to buy extra savings.
If you want to buy commodities, and if you're talking about gold as the commodity that you want to buy as opposed to other commodities, you don't want to buy a numismatic coin. Now, you know, because then you're also investing in a rare coin. You're making, you know, which it's like buying, you know, baseball cards or stamps. If you want gold, then buy gold. Don't buy a numismatic coin that's made of gold because the gold is not really, it's part of what you're buying. It could be only a small part. And you don't want to pay such a horrific markup. You want to buy, you know, bullion coins, whether they're, you know, maple leaves or cougarans or philharmonics or pandas. There are a lot of coins and bars that you can buy, and you're not going to pay a 17% markup. I mean, you're going to pay, you know, the more legitimate, you know, companies are generally the markups are 2%, 3%, 4%, you know, depending on who you talk to. I mean, and now that's not above spot. Generally, when you're buying some of these coins, gold coins, you might be paying 4, 5, 6% above spot or tops, you know, depending on who you're working with. There are a number of different dealers out there. But you do not want to pay somebody, you know, a 15%, 20% markup. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, that, you know, there are gold companies now, you know, on that gold line, I called on one of their coins. They were marking them up 67.5%. I mean, you know, you can't market something as an investment where your client needs a 70% gain just to break even. So you got to be careful. So as I said, if you're interested in buying physical precious metals, talk to, you know, one of the salesmen at Euro Pacific Precious Metals, and we'll make sure that you get the most gold and silver for your money.
So if you have bought silver coins, like how would you sell them once if you made a bad investment?
Well, what you should do is you should tell my salesman what you own, because if you've already overpaid to buy it, it doesn't mean that you should turn around and sell it, because, you know, there's also, you're also going to have to hit a bid. So once you've made the decision, if you, depending on what it is, right, you know, if you've bought a coin where you paid a big premium over its melt value, but it all depends on what you're going to get when you sell it. If you're selling it for its melt value, because that's the bid, then you might as well hang on to that coin, but just don't buy any more, because if you buy more from that same source, you're just throwing your money away.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Yes, you know, and some of these horror stories, and, you know, people just getting, you know, charged so much for gold coins, and all the tactics where people call up these companies and they want to buy gold coins, and some salesman pressures them in to some numismatic coin that they don't need, but the salesman needs to sell it because he makes 10 times the commission. You know, that's why I set this company up, Euro Pacific Precious Metals, because, you know, I don't want people to have that happen. You know, I don't want to hear these stories anymore. So if people call up my company, they're going to be treated fairly, and no one's going to pressure you into doing anything that's not, you know, at all. And whatever you buy will be what's in your interest, not because my salesmen are getting paid extra to sell it. Anyway, next up is Eric in North Carolina.
Here, how you doing this evening?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very good. I've been an investor in the Perth Mint in precious metals for about 2 years now, and I was talking to my broker about 2 months ago, and I found out that the precious metals that I held there were unallocated, which means that, as you know, I didn't have precious metals. I had a promise to pay precious metals or to own precious metals if I needed them.
That's not what unallocated means, because I have my Perth metal unallocated. What it means is that you own precious metals that are at the Perth Mint, except there isn't a particular coin that is set aside with your name on it. You just own some, you know, whatever. If you own 100 ounces of gold at the Perth Mint, of all the ounces they have that are in their possession, 100 of them are yours. You don't know which 100 are yours, but 100 of them do belong to you. It's not a promise to pay you gold. You actually have the gold there. You just don't know which ounces belong to you. Now, what happens is when you do that for them, they don't charge you a storage fee. Now, if you want to allocate the metal, you can. You can do whatever you want, but now they're going to start charging you an annual fee to store it. And so I would rather not pay the fee, because it doesn't matter to me which gold is mine. I don't care. As long as my gold is there, I don't care if my gold is separated from somebody else's gold. It doesn't matter to me. But you can always move it to allocated. I just don't think it's worth it. But if you want allocated metals in your possession, that's another reason I set up the Euro Pacific Precious Metals, because I think it makes sense to have some of your gold out of the country in Australia, and you might as well not pay to store it, but it also makes sense to have some gold buried in your backyard, in a safe in your house, so that you have it with you. And that's where you want the physical delivery.
Okay, yeah, I have recently switched it to allocated, and I've heard so much about this recently on the news, whereas when the time comes and you do need your precious metals, there may be an extremely long delay in actually getting them.
I don't think so, but that's a good reason. I mean, the only time there'd be a delay to get your metals out of the Perth Mint is if there's so many orders to fabricate that they don't have the machinery to turn the gold bars into the smaller coins that everybody wants. See, people don't want 100-ounce bars of gold. They usually want 1-ounce coins. And if they have a lot of orders, they don't have the machines, you might have to wait. That's why I think that you should have your emergency gold or silver you know, at your house. But, you know, if you're going to keep a lot of money in gold and silver, you're not going to need it in a hurry. You're, you know, you just want it out there protecting your wealth. I think there is a lot of scare tactics. There are a lot of competitors out there that try to scare people away from the Perth Mint because I think they have a really good product, and they try to scare you. Oh, they really don't have the gold, though. It's just paper. You know, it's not. It's a good product. I wouldn't be recommending it to my clients if I didn't think it was a good product. I certainly wouldn't have my own money there if I didn't think it was a good product. But I don't think you should keep all your gold anywhere. So I think you need to have you need to spread it around.
But if you have unallocated metal at the Perth Mint, they guarantee that they have 100% of that physical metal there in some form at all times.
Yep. Yep, they okay. do. And it's guaranteed by the government there. So you got a, you know, your AAA rated credit entity guaranteeing it. Anyway, thanks for the call. I know we're running out of time and I want to take the last two callers. So Joel, you're up next from Minnesota.
Hey Peter, thanks for taking my call. The reason I'm calling is because there's a it's ticker symbol DGP. It's a Deutsche Bank double gold, and mm-hmm. it leverages your gains and losses by two. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on that particular stock.
Well, you know, obviously, you know, it's a way to speculate because it's basically like, you know, you've got 2-to-1 leverage, which means if gold goes up, you make twice as much, and if gold goes down, you lose twice as much. The only key is going to be, do they actually have the gold they claim they have? What if gold goes up and they don't really have it? And then, you know, so that's a risk that you take if there's some kind of accounting fraud. But assuming it's all on the up and up, you know, to know whether that's a good idea or not, I'd have to compare the price of buying that to, you know, what I can, you know, buy, let's say, GLD on margin. And so what is the broker going to charge me to margin? My feeling is they might have better rates, and so it might be cheaper to leverage your gold. But, of course, you can buy the DGT and do that on margin, and now you got 4x leverage. So, of course, you know, it all depends on, you know, how big a bet. But what I don't like about leveraging precious metals is you take what I believe is a conservative investment. I don't even think it's an investment because I think it's just money. It's gold bullion. But the minute you leverage it, you turn it into something much riskier because what happens is, if you get a big drop and you're on margin and you get a margin call, you could be forced to sell, and now you've sold out at a loss. Whereas if you don't have any margin, no matter how much the price goes down, nobody can make you sell it. And so, you know, a lot of people have lost a lot of money because they've been greedy and they've gotten leveraged. Now, when you're right and you time it right, you know, you can make a lot of extra money. It's a double-edged sword. So, you know, and you got to make the decision for yourself what you want to do. I mean, we don't encourage people to use leverage. I discourage people from using leverage in physical precious metals, and I discourage my clients. You know, we don't have a lot of margin accounts. I don't want people in over their heads. I know these markets are volatile. I don't want people to be forced to sell. I don't want my brokers getting on the phone and making margin calls. You know, so in general, I advise people not to speculate like that. But, I mean, you know, you make up your own mind.
Okay. All right. Thanks. That's the only question I had. Look forward to being on the show tomorrow. Thanks
for the call. And the last caller of the night is going to be Eric from Illinois.
Hi, Peter.
Go ahead, Eric. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm a you know, college student, and I read Bull Moves and Bear Markets, and I was just wondering, you recommend an engineering as a field to go into, but it just seems like there's not, like in America currently, we're so unproductive that there's not much, you know, we're not producing enough to really use the engineers that are graduating. But do you think now would be a good time for, you know, an engineer to, you know, go to say, I mean, it depends on the field they're in, but to Canada or Australia?
Yeah, I think engineering degrees are going to be valuable. I'm hoping they'll be valuable in America if we can pursue the right type of economic policies and reforms to get this country growing again, to make it productive again. Then engineers will be in demand here. But worst case scenario, if we continue to pursue the reckless policies that we're doing, you'll be able to take that degree to other countries and prosper there. I mean, that's going to be the unfortunate consequences where, you know, if we don't change direction in this country, if we keep socializing and growing the government and imposing more rules and more regulations, it's going to be every man for himself. And, you know, a lot of Americans are going to have to make the decision, do they go down with the ship or do they, you know, seek safety someplace else. And if you're young and you want to leave the country and you want someplace else, you know, you want to have a degree that gives you some value. And I think engineering is one of the ones that do. I mean, if you just have a liberal arts degree, you know, you're a history major, you're a poli sci major. I mean, good luck. So it's gonna be a lot harder. But there are certain skill sets that will be in demand anywhere in the world that you go.
Thanks, Peter.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. You know, and I hate to talk about the fact that people might have to leave the country, but they might. I mean, my grandparents, all four of my grandparents, came here from Europe because there wasn't enough opportunity there. There was too much government, and they came to America. Now, not all the Europeans came to America, but the best and the brightest did. That's one of the reasons this country had such a leg up. Not only did we have limited government, but we had so many hardworking people that came to this country in pursuit of the opportunities that limited government afforded. And and it would be a shame for the grandchildren and great-grandchildren of all those immigrants to leave for the same reason that they came. So I want to try to repair the damage. I want to try to make it so that this country can prosper again, so that the best and the brightest want to stay here and want to come here, and that capital wants to come here. It's not impossible. It's not like we have to reinvent the wheel. We know exactly what works, and we know what doesn't work. We have to just stop doing what doesn't work and start doing what does. The only problem is what works is not politically popular. That is the problem. It's often the case that medicine, doesn't taste good, but that doesn't mean you don't swallow it. And I've got to somehow convince the country that swallowing the bad tasting medicine is worth the results of a healthy economy and a vibrant and a growing economy. Anyway, that's going to be it for today. Let me remind everybody again, if you haven't read my newest book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes, make sure and pick up a copy. Pick one up for your dad for Father's Day. Maybe Amazon can ship it quick enough for you to get it for Father's Day. If you've got a kid who's graduating, pick up a graduation gift. This is a great book to buy. One of the reviews on Amazon mentioned he bought 32 copies, giving them away to friends and coworkers, and he said it's making a big difference. It's really influencing the way people think. We need to get this book out there. I did pick up one review in a magazine. Oh, and today I got another review from like a conservative think tank in the UK. I wish we'd get one in the U.S. that would endorse this book. But I think it's very important that this book get out there because I think it can make a major impact. Glenn Beck on his show the other day, recommended The Road to Serfdom by Hayek, which is an excellent book, and it drove it to number one on Amazon. But I wish you would recommend my book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes, because a lot more people will actually read it and understand it. But if we can get that book out there, that'd be great. And again, don't forget about Crash Proof 2.0 if you haven't bought that one. And don't forget to give us a call, 800-727-7922, to talk to a Euro-Pacific Capital broker about the strategies that we recommend, to find out about the risks and whether international investing or precious metals investing is suitable for you and your risk tolerance and your objectives. Anyway, that's it. Until next week, this has been Peter Schiff. Signing off, Euro-Pacific Capital, Wall Street Unspun, and Senate candidate from Connecticut, hopefully. Anyway, take care, everybody.